Translation. Upon seeing the person engaged in performing the sacrifice, animals meant to be sacrificed are extremely afraid, thinking, this merciless performer of sacrifices, being ignorant of the pure purpose of sacrifice and being most satisfied by killing others, will surely kill us. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Animal sacrifice in the name of religion is current practically all over the world in every established religion. It is said that Jesus Christ, when 12 years old, was shocked to see the Jews sacrificing birds and animals in the synagogues, and that he therefore rejected the Jewish system of religion and started the religious system of Christianity. Adhering to the Old Testament commandment, Thou shalt not kill. At the present day, however, not only are animals killed in the name of sacrifice, but the killing of animals has increased enormously because of the increasing number of slaughterhouses. Slaughtering animals, either for religion or for food, is most abominable and is condemned herein. Unless one is merciless, one cannot sacrifice animals, either in the name of religion or for food. Om Aganti Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Melitam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Nama Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svabhadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uttapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrinda Venishvari Rishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare In the previous chapter, it was mentioned how the importance of Brahminical culture. And so this chapter is now explaining how to apply Brahminical culture by the general mass of people. And it speaks about how the common householder, everybody can perform some jagya, some sacrifice. But then when it came to the seventh text, it explained that, but the sacrifice of animals, either the offering of meat, Amisha, to the forefathers, or even to the Brahmins and the Supreme Lord, is completely condemned. And then in this particular verse, it starts to explain that but human society has come to such a degraded situation that animals are killed wholesale without any thought of sacrifice. Originally, there would be... He says, one who is merciless can kill animals, but one who is one has to be merciless to kill animals. And so the Vedic sacrifices explain how one has to perform a particular yajna and chant a certain mantra in the animal's ear. And by the time he's got to the end of the yajna, he's thinking twice about doing this. And still, if he's intent on killing the animal, he must have a merciless nature. So this is the mercy of the Vedas, that they're bringing that low-born person gradually to a higher understanding by this gradual recitation of these mantras. Or how else will he become saved? But we see modern society, it's become so degraded that wholesale sacrifice is carried out in slaughterhouses. So this is when people don't follow that injunction, that they gradually become more and more and more degraded. So that even, I remember before I joined the movement actually, I was thinking, I'm so fortunate to be able to eat beef. Not many people can afford beef in the world. You know, this was a mentality. I didn't think it was wrong. It's natural, that's the way you're brought up. So this is the way society is going, that, you know, more and more degraded, more and more. I say once Srila Prabhupada, he was in London in the early days, I think it was 1969 or 1970, and Rabetinandan Swami, he was in charge of this yatra at that time, and he organized a particular... He'd organized a program in one of the local halls, and at that time the devotees, when they were in books, they were getting a lot of stick from the Christians, as usual. And so in this particular, they didn't expect it in this particular venue. But then Prabhupada was talking about the holy name and the deity of the Lord, and then at the end of the class he asked for any questions, and this Christian spoke up and was more or less blaspheming Prabhupada for daring to speak the holy name of the Lord and glorify in that way. The name of the Lord was Krishna. And so Prabhupada, he didn't bother to answer, and he just turned to Ribhartinanda and Swami and said, you answer. And so he was shocked because he wasn't expecting it. And so he described in the, when the sun shines, actually I was reading this, it's described that he meditated for a little while, and he plucked up a little bit of courage and he started to answer. And he was saying, in the Christian scriptures it says, thou shalt not kill. Love thy neighbour with all thy... Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart. Love thy neighbour as thyself. So what are the Christians doing? They're killing, killing, killing. Killing the animals, killing one another, wars. He says, my spiritual master has come here to live a pure love of God. So he says, we can be saved from this obnoxious situation by chanting the holy name of the Lord. And he went on a little bit further, and then he ended, and the Christian just walked out. And Prabhupada was beaming. He says, our Rabetinandan Swami knows how to defend this philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So we're not pacifists when it comes to preaching the absolute truth. We will actually speak when it needs to be spoken. And so this was one incident. So where does it all start? I was thinking that in the first canto, it says Maharaj Parikshit, this is talking about Brahminical, he was under Brahminical guidance, and therefore, because he was such a powerful kshatriya and he was taking that guidance, Kali couldn't enter into his kingdom. When he cornered Kali, when he was beating the bull and the cow, he was going to kill him, and Kali surrendered. Kali had intelligence. He knew that I have no chance with this present Vaishnav king. And so he gave him three places to live. And Kali was saying that, actually, there's nowhere in your kingdom where this exists. I'm one of your subjects. You have to give me somewhere. And so he said, okay, where there's hoarding of gold. And so actually, this is where it all starts, that we start hoarding gold. It's greed, lust. The original reason that a person comes to the material world, the living entities, because of this lust. And so this lust takes different forms. And therefore, in the hoarding of gold, it's when we're not satisfied, it becomes greed. And this just escalates. So then, how does it come into that we start killing animals? I've said this before, I think, in the class at the manor, but I think it's worth repeating, that I was reading in a Bhakti Godhead magazine. I think it was Hare Krishna David Dasi was writing in the early 90s, and she was talking about how in a Vedic, she says there's three things that shouldn't be sold for profit. One is poison. I think everybody will agree with that one. Anybody who wants to buy poison, then there's something wrong. And then there's a hair. So what's wrong with air? Who wants to buy air? But then she clarifies, talking about even sheep have hair. This is very, you know, wool. And so at that time, about 200 years ago, maybe a little bit further back than that, before the Industrial Revolution, it started when the landowners, they had serfs living on their land. And But then they understood that actually this greed came in. They weren't following the Vedic process. They weren't satisfied by being satisfied with a simple life and being simple in themselves and teaching their dependents to be simple and leading a life direct towards God consciousness. So as soon as this lack of following the Vedic process came in, greed, this lust starts to manifest. And so they were thinking, actually, this wool is very, very precious. If I put sheep on the land and then I sell this wholesale, I can make a lot of profit. And I can do so many things with this profit. And so then they just turfed all the serfs off the land and put sheep on the land. And a lot of them starved to death. So we see this greed is where it's all at. So and what's the third one? Milk. What about milk? It said that ordinarily the Vedic system would be that one would produce enough milk for oneself first, then the next day it would be turned to yogurt and then butter, and then if that one still had excess, then one would sell it. But that the farmer was not relying on his maintenance from that. He was already satisfied, he got everything he wanted. But it was sold at whatever price somebody could buy it for, at a reasonable, and there was a little bit of profit there. But he wasn't dependent on it. But then, what happens if we start, somebody may have an idea, wait a minute, they're selling it fairly cheaply, I can maybe make a little bit more profit out of this milk if I... So when one starts to make a livelihood out of selling milk, then there's competition. And then there's competition for price. And so one's overheads has to be kept down to be competitive, isn't it, to sell the milk. And then the cow gets too old to milk. What happens? It becomes an unwanted overhead, which is pulling the price up. And so what do they do with the cow? They kill the cow. So this is where it comes in, this lust, this gold. This is where Kali really went to work. And how does it go in with the bull? How did the bull get slaughtered? Said the bull would be ploughing the land, nice steady pace. You know, you could fall asleep on the back of the plough. And then, of course, then somebody gets a little bit of lust in their mind. Thinks, wait a minute, I could make a lot more profit if I got this harvesting quicker. This bull's so slow. What to do? Oh, I know. Shire horse. You remember the shire horse? Put the harness the shire horse up, clippity-clop, clippity-clop. Plowing twice as fast. So what does it do with a bull? It's now useless. They send it to a slaughterhouse. And then eventually, they send the shire horse to the slaughterhouse also, because then the tractor comes in. It's even faster. So it's this greed which starts all this lust after profit, not being satisfied with the Vedic culture. Just a few points there. So then it escalates. Then we start thinking how we can make more and more profit. So we bring people off the land, we gather them into the cities. Then we can feed them the animals that we don't need anymore as food and like this. I remember I was in Ireland and I was speaking to Mahesh Bhar, and he was telling me, he was reading an article, how one American, he was in America, and this person, he'd flaunted the law. He decided to sell his own produce, natural organic produce. This is taboo, isn't it? Can't sell natural produce. This is what's going on. So he was selling it, and the authorities found out he was selling milk which had not been pasteurized. And he was selling food which was straight out of the ground with natural fertilizer. And so they put him in prison. That's not the end of it, actually. They put him in prison for 40 years. Now, why is that? Because these demons, they know how dangerous this type of thought is. If people start growing their own food, they've lost them. They can't exploit them. I went to the... I was coming, driving from Sheffield to Manchester, and I went to this petrol station to fill up, drove in. And I was looking for the kiosk before I filled up. I thought, where's the kiosk? Then I looked, and there was just a card slot. And I realized that they don't even want you to have money anymore. They want to be completely in control. You can't even have anything in your pocket. Then as soon as they say, you know, there's a drop in the market. I'm sorry, chaps, there's no more money. You're completely in their grip. Before, if there was gold, everybody had a little bit of gold, they couldn't take that from you. You could use it. You could still subsist. Very dangerous situation. This is why they put him in prison for 40 years. This is why they won't. If you have a land above a certain size, what do they do? You can only grow this by law. You have to grow a rapeseed. But I want to grow a few vegetables. And like this, just you can't. You have to grow a rapeseed. Or some other useless product. Anyway, this is... So I actually read up for the verses because the first verse what was on was 7. Then I was told not long ago that it was 10. So I started with 10. So with 7, where are we? Yeah, this was Jayato Vishayang Pungsha. All bad qualities come from this desire. Sangat Teshu Bajayate. Sangat Sanjayate Kama, Kama Krodha Bajayate. So, why is that? It's the natural tendency of the living entity to exploit others in the material world. And I was reading one verse in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'll not read the Sanskrit, but it says, in this material world, the conditioned soul is always inclined to sex, meat-eating and intoxication. Therefore, religious scriptures never actually encourage such activities, although the scriptural injunctions provide for sex through sacred marriage, for meat-eating through sacrificial offerings, and for intoxication through the acceptance of ritual cups of wine. Such ceremonies are meant for the ultimate purpose of renunciation. This is Chamasa Yogendra to King Nimi. So that so when we try to enjoy separately from the Lord, automatically we try to exploit. And how do we exploit? These are the four things we try to exploit through. And so the material world is built like that, that, you know, okay, you want it like that. Ahastani sahastanam, apadani jatuspadam, falguni tatra mahatam, jiva jivasya jivanam. That one living entity is food for another. Animal kingdom, hellish condition of life. Even humans have their predators to some degree, but not so prominent. But in the human form, it's a chance not to actually become part of that equation that we have to live at the cost of somebody else. We are doing, but we shouldn't have to. So, it's like, it's primitive life, isn't it? I remember seeing one program on the television. It was on, you know, they sometimes have these documentaries on. It was about people lived in Borneo, you know, they have a piece of bone through the nose, and they're not very well advanced in culture. So what they do when the elders get older, they kill them. They kill them and eat them. When they get a little bit too old, like, they, you know, we kill the cow because it's unproductive. They kill the elders because they become unproductive. And then, so this is there. And we might think that, oh, this is really primitive. But actually, when we sway from the primitive culture, what's the next type of leadership do we get after the primitive? Brahmins are the ones who are not dependent, but they give guidance to the Kshatriyas. So therefore, they're above suspicion. Nobody can touch them. Okay, do what you want. They can carry on with their spiritual life. They're not dependent. So the Kshatriyas... generally, but when the Kshatriyas don't follow the Brahmins, when lust creeps into, then they become independent. Then we get a Kshatriya where kings are leading instead. This is the beginning of the degradation. Then what comes next? The kings also become enamored with too much money, so money becomes prominent. Then the Vaishyas start to become prominent, and the Vaishyas then start to control the leaders. So we have a Vaishya community, or what they call it, democracy, is it? Capitalism, yeah, capitalism. But then what happens next? When the general mass of people think, we want a share of this, we're not getting our share, we're going on strike. And so then what do we get? We get eventually socialism and then communism. And he says, this is the worst government. You know, you've got Shudras trying to run a country or trying to run the world. And Prabhupada said, I was on a morning walk once, Prabhupada, and he mentioned, he says, do you know, in the future, the communists will introduce euthanasia. And he looked at his, he said, do you know this? How did Prabhupada know that? He's following the same theme. That, you know, the elders have got too old. Let's kill them. And then the next thing will be, let's eat them. You think that sounds far-fetched, but it's already happening. In different parts of the world, they eat human fetuses. So we can see how the Brahminical culture is saving society. As soon as we deviate from following the instruction of the Brahmins, so many untoward things start to creep in. So this was mentioned in 7.7 about that we shouldn't offer sacrifice with flesh. And then 7.8, it says, persons who are advanced in superior religion are advised to give up all envy of other living entities, whether in relation to the body, words or mind. There is no religion superior to this. So then it's talking about the importance of giving up that envy. Envy means that we kill the animals, we kill others. But envy is coming from this lust. All bad qualities are coming from this lust, from this desire to enjoy. So I thought I'd just say that. So therefore, what does Bhagavad Gita tell us? Bhagavad Gita says we should what about lust? We should stop it completely. Yeah? No, we should regulate it. We should control this lust gradually. And so Bhagavad Gita in the 14th chapter, it says that otherwise it overruns us like a fire. It gets out of control, just burns everything in its path. So in Bhagavad Gita, it starts to explain that what is this envy? It's coming from lust. And how do we control lust? It says austerity, and it mentions three kinds of envy. Envy of the body, envy of the mind, and envy of in words. So first of all, there's envy of the body. It consists in worship of the Supreme Lord, the Brahmins, the spiritual master, and superiors like the father and mother, and in cleanliness, simplicity, celibacy, and non-violence. So Gita's giving us a clue how to everybody should, whether they're Vaishnava or not, should follow this particular principle. Envy in words. How do we overcome envy? I'm quoting envy in words. Was this verse is saying then austerity in words? Is that? Yes, these are in goodness, yeah. Yeah, there's also passion and ignorance. I'm quoting what's Brahminical culture because previous chapter was mentioning the importance of the Brahminical culture and now how to apply Brahminical culture. Envy. Envy is from one of the bad qualities which comes from lust. Envy. Yeah, in 7.8, it's in 15.8, it starts to explain about the three kinds of envy. And what I'm linking it to is that this envy is coming from this desire to enjoy, this lust. And that's seen in how Maharaj Pariksit was saying that, you know, therefore people want to acquire things, so gold. But when we can become greedy after monetary gain, then it leads to all bad qualities. We're not satisfied, so greed comes, and then anger comes. We're angry at others. Why? Envy's in the heart also. There's competition, so competition means envy. So this verse is speaking about envy, and so I'm relating it to the cure is not, the cure for envy is to cure the lust, the original cause of the envy. So we were dealing with austerity of the body, and so envying words, which is coming from lust or desire to enjoy, eventually, is by austerity of speech. Envying words. Austerity of speech consists of speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and not agitating to others. And also in regular reciting Vedic literatures. This is extremely difficult, isn't it? What is it, as soon as a group get together, it's, psst, 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 did you hear about so-and-so? No, really. And everybody's in ecstasy, aren't they, for some time. It's just a natural this natural tendency is in the heart. So it's a big austerity to think, I don't want to hear. I'm going to walk away. So Raghunath Das Goswami used to do that. Get off to the... Oh, was it Raghunath Das? Used to run away from the situation, especially if Vaishnavas were involved. So this, it says in the Gita that, you know, the thing that in this third chapter about what it says, the thing that actually gives us pleasure in the material world is our greatest enemy. So we should think about that. You know, where's my pleasure coming from? Where's it? Oh, just a minute. Let me change this situation. It should be coming from glorifying Krishna, glorifying the Vaishnavas, speaking words beneficial, glorifying another devotee, like this. Pleasing, words which are pleasing to everybody. There is always a tendency to criticize. Envy of the mind, which is coming from a lust in the mind. So this lust is overcome by austerity of the mind. What's austerity of the mind? Satisfaction. Satisfied with what we have. Satisfied with the Brahminical culture. Simplicity. Not being straightforward. Not trying to make ourselves something that we're not. Presenting things as they are. If I have this nature, just use it in Krishna's service. Don't try to be something else. Satisfaction with the situation I've got, with the service that I've got. Self-control, controlling the mind. And purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. So one should be thinking of, only goal is how I can become Krishna conscious. One verse in the Bhagavad Gita, actually. Only a person who's on the transcendental path is just thinking of how the next step. Every situation, how can this help me to become Krishna conscious? This is austerity of the mind. Always thinking of doing good for others. Also, that's mentioned in Prabhupada's purport. Just see somebody, instead of being envious, how can I do this person some good? Just like we may go out and do books, but you know, we sometimes can think like that. But can we think about it in the temple, in the association of other Vaishnavas? In other words, so... Then it went into 7:15:9, and then it started to explain, because of an awakening of spiritual knowledge, those who are intelligent in regard to sacrifice, who are actually aware of religious principles, and who are free from material desires, control the self in the fire of spiritual knowledge, or knowledge of the absolute truth. They may give up the process of ritualistic ceremonies. So karma kanda, then jnana kanda means we give it up to some degree, we try to renounce, and then eventually upasana kanda, we come to the knowledge of the Supreme Lord. And this is the ultimate where we can give up these sacrifices and sacrifice for the benefit of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the whole society at large. In the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it explains these three different ways people surrender. Some people, they're too attached to enjoying. And so he says, if we cannot give up the sense of enjoying, then we should follow the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas, Karma Yoga. Also, if we are renounced, we've become disgusted, that person will try to give up enjoyment. He says, one who's further advanced, he's fortunate. He gets a taste for hearing about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is our goal, isn't it? The higher taste. We're trying to get a taste for hearing. He said, then what's his mentality? How does he walk through the world? How does he sit? How does he walk? Like this. He says that this person, he doesn't try to enjoy and he doesn't try to renounce. It's in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And when I read that, I was really shocked. He doesn't try to get out of this material world. I thought, what does this mean, when I first read that? And then later on, of course, I understood it more deeply, that while we have this material body, we have to, what's the first instruction of the Bhagavad Gita? We have to tolerate. We have to tolerate the situation, heat and cold, happiness and distress. And if we can tolerate, then our claim to going back to Godhead is very much manifested. And then, but carry on with our devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj says that, doesn't he? What are you trying to enjoy for? Happiness and distress are going to come. Why are you looking after these things? But we still do. Yeah. So just carry on with your devotional service. This happiness and distress will come and go. You're entitled to so much due to your karma. And if we become Krishna conscious, Rishabhadev say? We're entitled to so much happiness. A happiness which lasts forever. Nayam deho deho bhajam rilke. Kastam kam arti vidbhajamte. Tapo divyam. Purtaka yena tatvam. Shodjet yasmat karma. Shokyam tranantam. This Brahma Shokyam, this transcendental happiness. So these are different paths we can take. But we're advised, tapasa brahmacharyena, to follow the path of devotional life. So we follow, we control the senses, we chant the holy name. This is this particular verse. And we perform the particular sacrifice for the positive and negative injunctions of devotional service. So then this tendency to exploit, which includes envy of the other living entities, is cleared away. It's like the burnt grass and the leaves and the twigs of underneath a tree. They're completely burnt away. But what's the problem? It says they may come back. When there's a little bit of rain, there they are again. He says, so kechit ke valaya bhakta vasudeva prayana. What's the rest of it? Don't spell it kartsneya. Kartsneya. He says that one who performs pure devotional service, if we can perform pure devotional service, then we can dispel all this. It's just like this, the mist in the morning, when as soon as the sun comes up, it's immediately dispelled. He says, if we perform pure devotional service, then it uproots this tendency to perform sinful activities. So Prabhupada, he never pulled punches. He never told anybody to chant two rounds, chant four rounds. He always went straight for the rhinoceros, straight for the bull. Chant 16 rounds. Become a pure devotee. Because he knows that this is so much on the safe side. I remember reading about Guru Kripa. He was asleep. He may have heard this pastime. In the middle of the night, which you usually do. And Prabhupada came into his dormitory and he says, he woke him up. He says, what are you doing? He says, I'm sleeping, Prabhupada. He says, why? He says, because he made a mistake. He says, I'm not a pure devotee. And Prabhupada said, why aren't you a pure devotee? And he gave some reasons. And then Prabhupada said, why aren't you a pure devotee? And he gave some more reasons. And then he shouted at him again and he started crying. He says, you should be a pure devotee. No excuses. So it's within our... So what's the process? Etan nirvijyamananam ititam akutobayam. Yoginam nipaniritam harinamuna kirtanam. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is a doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. So whether we desire material enjoyment, whether we're free from material enjoyment, or whether we're devotee, then we can carry on this process of chanting the holy name of the Lord. And this will uproot this deep-rooted tendency to perform sinful activities, to be envious of others. Prabhupada said our advancement in devotional service is gauged by how we're non-envious. When that envy is gone from the heart, or going from the heart, we can understand we're actually making progress. And this is coming from this chanting of the holy name. I was thinking that actually we become a devotee by chanting the holy name. But what pleases the Supreme Personality of Godhead the most? What pleases our founder Acharya Prabhupada the most? What did he strive so much to do? To keep it to ourselves? No, to preach. This is a first-class way of keeping fully engaged in devotional service. There's so much preaching work to do, so many books to distribute, so many Harinams to perform, that keep us out of trouble. by giving the holy name, giving Krishna consciousness to others, forming namhattas, by forming like this, then we're really pleasing Krishna. We can overcome so many obstacles. So these obstacles may still be there in the beginning, it says, in the 11th canto. Anybody found that? Are they still there in the heart to some degree? Or are they completely gone yet? So it says, what do we do? Sometimes we become morose. Oh, God, I'll never get rid of this. You know, we get on the mental platform. But it says that even though my devotee, even though he's still attached to sense gratification, Prabhupada, it writes in the translation, and even though he can't give it up, and he's got every reason to, you know, just pack it all in other words, he says he should remain happy in devotional service, knowing that every time he does this, he's going to suffer. That, you know, by performing devotional service, eventually he'll become pure. So he should remain satisfied in that process, and then eventually the goal is achieved. So we shouldn't feel at any time distressed in devotional service. We're never in a worse situation than we were before we came to this movement, even though so many things might happen. It's just the mind and the intelligence, or the polluted mind and intelligence, which may try to convince us of that. So anyway, this is some thoughts on this particular section.